Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Cynthia Freeland joining us from the NFL Network. You can follow her on Twitter. There she is at CFRELUND. She joins us in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Cynthia, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So I read your piece about a couple weeks ago defending Baker Mayfield, and you know, my synopsis, my takeaway was really, even with the lower passer rating, while not under pressure and some of the stats where Baker wasn't necessarily the best in that category, he's been put in horrible throwing situations, and maybe his receivers just haven't been getting open. How do you see it with Baker?
Yeah, it's kind of a confluence of all of those things, right? Like, there's been a lot of, like, so I went back and measured kind of what was going on in these clean pocket situations. And the reason that a lot of us in analytics like clean pockets is because it's kind of the best you can do, right? No pressure in your face, and you're able to get your full throwing motion, go off the right foot, all the mechanics and dynamics of the pass all work together. But when you look at it, none of his receivers are open. So while he may not be having pressure come in his face, on the back end, like, the receivers have far less separation than they should, given the routes that they're running, or that they did last season, even on similar routes with arguably, you know, I think Odell Beckham is, everyone thinks, is an upgrade. And, you know, these are situations that are kind of contrarian to what you'd think when you have that much talent. And then when you go back and kind of look even deeper, what's happening is he has the most attempts of second and third down in 15 plus, which is like, you're in a crappy situation. The defense knows you're going to pass. So they have, you know, the ability to kind of flag what you're doing and telegraph what you're doing. And then add to that, that they're running the same plays in these situations. So it's not even like a different, you know, it's one thing to have, like, you know, three wide receivers out there, but they're lining up in oftentimes the same place and running the same routes with the same assignments. So coaches are going to scout you. They obviously know that they have to account for Jarvis Landry. They have to account for Odell Beckham Jr. They have to figure out how to stop Nick Chubb. But if you're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result,
that's insanity. That's insanity, Cynthia.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to call someone insane, but it's improbable. Let's put it that way. That's a nice way to put it, right?
Yeah, I would agree. Cynthia, what do you make of the Browns' offensive line? Because a lot of the national narrative has been that the offensive line stinks and it's given Baker no time. But I get the sense that it's not quite as bad as maybe some people think.
I think that in run blocking situations, like, Nick Chubb's amazing. He kind of is a good eraser for a lot of that. And Kareem Hunt is also great. Obviously, we only have one sample set of him. And the two of them together, like, interesting efficiencies there, which was why that was so weird that we didn't see them in goal line situations last game. But I think that'll evolve for them to be together. But I think, look, O-line, it's not as good as it was last season. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, like, and last season, it was one of the best in the league. So you're going from one of the best to, I'd say, slightly below average. I don't think it's the worst. I think you're right. I think that narratives blow it out of proportion in the sense of, like, you know, it's all terrible. I do think, you know, because week one, there were so many expectations. And what you saw was a lot of penalties and a lot of miscommunication, which makes it seem worse than it maybe is. But that happens in a game every now and again. I mean, the Saints inexplicably lost last week to the Falcons, so at home, right? So sometimes you just get these games that are kind of outliers in that situation. But it just so happened that that was the one where everyone's like, well, these Browns are going to the Super Bowl. It's going to be amazing. And the expectations were so high that when you saw something was worse than last season and a little bit worse than average, it felt worse because you expected so much.
So you mentioned that Freddie Kitchens kind of seems like a one-trick pony more than anything else because he's running some of the similar plays that you've seen throughout the entirety of the season. What kind of wrinkle did you see when Kareem Hunt got added in the mix last week?
Well, with all of the tight ends being injured, or many tight ends being injured, especially the ones that are, you know, were the starters at the beginning of the season, you have, like, a different blocking dynamic and a different spread, like how far away the formation was spread out and not. And Kareem Hunt spread the offense a bit more, which created a bit more space for Nick Chubb to work with, or for Kareem Hunt to, you know, snatch up those little, those higher probability passes. So the space changed, right? Like that sounds simple, but it created a little bit more space where it wasn't all bunched with just receivers on the outsides, right? It was like, well, what's Kareem Hunt going to do? Is his assignment to block here? Is his assignment to run a route here? Is his assignment to be, you know, the actual ball carrier? So it's the misdirection that he affords them and the ability to, you know, spread the offense out away from being so close and all stacked right in next to the line, like, you know, right next to the offensive lineman.
Cynthia, when you look at tonight's matchup between the Browns and the Steelers, and certainly that pass rush from Pittsburgh is ferocious, and, you know, they just get after quarterbacks. How tough a challenge is that going to be for Baker and this O-line tonight?
You know, I think first down, look, everyone knows third down's the money down, right? You need to convert on third down to stay on the field, of course. But I think first down has been where we've seen, like, I think that's going to be the trick in this one. If they can on first down stay, like, they just need to stay in front. They need to make sure that they're not getting behind on second and third down, right? They need to stay in front of the sticks. I don't love that expression, but they need to keep moving. They need to be efficient on first down so that you can optimally get Baker set up for the things that Baker does really well, which namely is having the best thing Baker does in my opinion, and what the math bears out, is he gives you this like ultimate, like every single receiver is an option. And you can only do that if you have the threat of the run or you have the threat of all the options. If you know you need 15 or more yards, you take away short passes, which stinks, because that's where Baker's insane, is picking Baker's ability to read the progressions and connect with different receivers. That's what made him so dangerous last season, right? But if you take that strategically away from him, it's not going to make any quarterback in a good situation. So first down, there be no penalties or few penalties, and keep the sticks moving.
So you think that's why, you know, when we watch these games, you're right, last year he went through some progressions. This year we watch, he's got one look, and it seems like that's it. You think that's the reason why?
I think it's in part. I mean, it's hard to have multiple options to throw to when you're in a very, like, defenses play a decision tree. If this, then that. Okay. If this, then, like, they go through, and the best defensive players, they go through, and they, and by the way, Pittsburgh's defense in the back end, especially with Minkah Fitzpatrick mm-hmm. there now, is that deep safety.
Yep.
Like, that's a tough task, right? So they go through, like, it can't be this, if this, it can't be this, if this. If this alignment looks like this, it cannot be. There's no X route. Like, it's not going to be a post because of the way they're lined up, or all these different things. They go through and they kind of narrow things down based on what they're seeing. And if the looks aren't varied enough, and if the opportunity and the receivers aren't getting open enough, and if there aren't those separate looks, then you're not going to have the opportunity to even, you know, there aren't those intermediate passes or the shorter passes available, right? So mm-hmm. the strategy of staying on first down, keeping Baker having all of the different options on second and third down, that's the trick to beating the Steelers.
Cynthia Freeland joining us from the NFL Network. Also, you can follow her on Twitter at CFRELUND. You can see Cynthia tonight, 6 o'clock Eastern on NFL Game Day View, streaming on NFL.com.
You know who I'm on that with, right? Hawk.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Oh,
well,
cool.
Well, not tonight because he's actually in Cleveland for the game, but every other Thursday and Sunday, Hawk's on it. Except for tonight. He's doing a little remote little hit for us, but.
Have you appeared on the Tomahawk podcast yet?
She was just on it.
I have. I was on Sunday.
I clearly don't listen to it, but now I might, because you know, if you're on it.
We talked a lot about Browns on the goal line, and I did a whole like follow-up piece on that. I went into like really in-depth on like goal line decisions, and that's why I know so much about the bunch versus the spread, because, you know, when you've got such great wide receivers and you're keeping everyone bunched up and not creating enough space, you're not optimizing for your ability to score a touchdown.
So, all right, so what did you make? Obviously that was a great little analysis on that, but go deeper into the goal line situation. Like I didn't listen. Freddie is not a great play caller at this point. We understand that. We get that, but he at least ran Nick Chubb, which is progress from what we saw for the first 5 weeks of the season when they were in the goal line. Like, is there something you're seeing that maybe they're headed in the right direction there, or do I just have to throw up my hands every time they're in a goal line situation and expect them just not to get it done?
So I'm going to say that I don't know if Here's the thing. We can it's been 10 weeks now. So of course we think we have a big enough sample size in last season too on Freddie and play calling, but we don't know the inner workings, what's going on in, we don't exactly know everything. So I'm not willing to call Freddie Kitchens a bad play caller yet. I'm willing to say that in games, what I've observed is that there's been too much of similar plays that were called that mm-hmm. were not effective. So running the same play over and over again, whether it be a pass or a run for any team over, you know, I've looked very extensively at like over 10 years of data. And if any team that does that, if you're not switching up your looks, you're not efficient in those short yardage situations and you don't score touchdowns as often and you don't win games as often, which that bears out with the Browns, right? So what's interesting and what might be a wrinkle we should look out for tonight is really like making use of that spread situation with the Kareem Hunt and really utilizing the weapons on, you know, these perimeter weapons. These wide receivers are really, really good. You know, the Steelers do have an efficiency in the slot. So Jarvis Landry should have an advantage in terms of that in this game specifically. So, you know, varying the looks on the goal line and yes, run sometimes, but yes, don't run sometimes, but just don't do the same thing and don't line up the same way because you're going to tip them off and make their decision tree on defense a lot easier.
Cynthia, is there any stats that back up these short weeks? You know, teams coming off a short week like the home team versus the road team. I know it's not too far for Pittsburgh to come, but I'm curious if there is anything.
You know, there's stats that say weird things happen. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? Like,
okay.
So for example, any team, I know later in the season, and this is not a Browns-specific example, but like the Ravens and the Jets play on a short week, and the Ravens have a huge advantage in that situation because the Jets will have not seen an offense that looks like the Ravens in a long time. So they won't, their muscle memory for that kind of offense and their ability to pick up that defense, Greg Williams' ability to scheme for that defense, will be, it's going to be a steeper learning curve. So it's a harder task for them to overcome that game. And it's all about similarity. So short weeks with different types of offenses are harder. Short weeks with similar types of offenses are harder for defenses, right? So it's just how big is the change versus what your normal kind of cadence of the week is. So shorter weeks, the advantage goes to the team who has seen more similar offense and defense. So in the case of Browns versus the Steelers, since they're very familiar with each other, it's kind of like a normal week. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Cynthia. Yeah. Obviously, you do a lot of analyst work. You do a lot of different things in regards to numbers. When you see DVOA and you see Pittsburgh at third, but then it just doesn't align. So there's Buffalo. You know, we just play Buffalo, and Buffalo, some of their traditional stats are just nowhere close to DVOA. Where do you sit on that spectrum with what you take away from some of the traditional versus some of the advanced?
So I love the fact that like the best part about DVOA is that there's like it's like a recipe. You can follow it, right? And a traditional stat, it's like an ingredient. It just is, right? Like there's no like formulaic example of it. So when you look at it, it's like, take it all in context. You have to remember the way I see things is like, it's all about finding a doppelganger. Like, you know, when you think of home run hitters, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, you Barry Bonds is a totally different body type and potential, right? Than, I'm thinking about Barry Bonds or right and Sammy Sosa, like tons like pitchers and stuff, right? Like you don't expect your pitcher to be able to hit the ball, right? So you have to find doppelgangers and things that are comparable, that are similar. So like, this Pittsburgh Steelers defense looks like X type of defense or, you know, Y type of defense. So for me, DVOA is a great way to kind of understand it in the context of like who's most efficient this season. But you have to look at what is the configuration of this defense compared to your offense and what's it most like, because, you know, like, look, like playing Patrick Mahomes or playing the Chiefs defense, right? Like, can you imagine what would happen if Patrick Mahomes played his own defense? He'd kill him, right? They'd carve him up. But Patrick Mahomes against a different type of defense would be a different result. So I like all of those things, but you have to always go back to the fact that it's never like one thing is never the truth, right? It's how you put together like the advanced stat, the DVOA, with what you're seeing on film, with like recent trends that the Browns have been doing or not doing, and then take it all in summation and try to find some historical comps to make sure that it's all kind of similar.
Cynthia, this was great. We appreciate you. And thanks for making us a little bit smarter today too.
Hey, thanks anytime. Really appreciate you having me on.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.